This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good afternoon, Rutherford County. We have Mr. Jerry Gaither on today, and we had him on just a week ago, but it was so interesting. I had a number of callers that wanted him back on again, and of course, such a good friend and one of these nice guys that you love to have around. And this part of his show is brought to you by At Home Care, and they're located at 237 Castlewood Drive, and that's right behind the Kroger's on Memorial Boulevard. And if you're having trouble keeping up with your responsibilities inside your home, and it looks like that you no longer can do that, and alternatives may be in your future somewhere, well, don't even think about it. Give At Home Care a call, 713-4639. Pull them up on the internet, www.athomecaretennessee.com. They'll come into your home, take care of all the responsibilities 24/7, take care of all the errands that you have to run. They just make your life a whole lot simpler and nicer. So give them a call, 713-4639. How you doing today, Big Jerry?
I'm doing real fine. In fact, if you keep saying so many nice things about me, I might begin to start believing them.
Well,
I'm
should
doing
believe
fine.
Them.
Well, I've always tried to treat people right. I have a basic philosophy that I go around shaking hands with a lot of people, and now that I've retired, and people say, "What are you running for now?" I said, "Not anything." I think that when you look people in the eye and deal with them, and then when you shake their hands, that tells you more about them than any other, regardless of what they say. I remember when I was county superintendent of schools, and I told Ms. Michaels, I said, "Ms. Michaels, if a parent or somebody comes in, you're real upset and real mad, don't bring them back to my office. You come and get me and take me out there." And I would always shake hands with them and look them in the eye. And then when we come into office, I'd sit down on the same side of the desk that they were on. So I've always been convinced that a handshake and a good look in the eye tells you more about people than any other thing that you can do.
You've been that way your whole life, because I've known you for many, many years. But the thing about you is you were one of our last, not the last, but you were one of our last elected superintendents. And being an elected superintendent and being one that's appointed by the board, that has to be an entirely different situation for you.
It is, and I traveled all across the state, and I saw all the different categories of those people. The county school superintendents in so many counties, like when I was here, I worked with the State Department of Education, but I could not run for county school superintendent, because it was a partisan, they had a primary, so I couldn't run for school superintendent. I know when B. Brandon ran and got elected, he called me and wanted me to meet him. When he said, I'm too old to run, but if you'll run, I'll support you. And I couldn't tell him why, but I said, no, I'm not going to run. But the times have changed a lot, and it's got to be so expensive now to run for office. I know the year that I ran for superintendent of schools, that year I raised $22,000.
That's a lot of money back then.
And that was a lot of money back then, and I never took but two payments of over $100 each, and so I raised that much money, and of course I've still got all that stuck under the bed somewhere that I keep up with. You know, you have to hang on, they keep it up record somewhere, I guess. But anyway, it's always been a great pleasure to serve the public. I was on the county commission here for a long, long time, and have always enjoyed public service, and always appreciated the work. I sometimes get a little bothered now when people begin to attack everybody that works for government as being evil and bad. I don't believe that. I really like our form of government. It's I don't know of any that's better than ours.
You know, each superintendent has left his own legacy. at the school system, and yours reaches out as far as anyone. And one of them that I want to compliment you for hiring Joyce Michaels, because she has stood the test of time.
She is one of the finest people I've ever known. Not only is she a great secretary, she did a lot for the morale of people. She put a lot of class into our organization and a lot of caring. She would go out of her way to be helpful and useful. And when I hired her, I knew I had a jewel, but I couldn't tell people that. I just had to wait and let them prove herself. But she and Jim are two very fine people, and she's a. I worked at GE for 2.5 years, and she worked there some. I think she was working part-time, but I didn't know her all that well when I worked down there. But when I interviewed her, I was highly impressed with her, and her attitude and her behavior was unexcelled.
Now, you have been in the school profession for many, many years. Compare it now with when you first started and how it has grown to be where it is now.
I started in 1951.
Wow.
Can you imagine what it was like then?
That was my first year in Little League.
In fact, my first job was, I was in my last quarter of at the university, and Dean Beasley sent a girl down one morning to get me. I was working on Saturday morning. I was working on the maintenance crew. I worked on the maintenance crew. I was married when I went to college and had a wife and a child. And so I was working down on the maintenance crew. And I said, well, you tell him I'll be up there in a few minutes. Because I thought, well, I'm not going to graduate. I was in my last quarter. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, sir, he told me to bring you, not to let you come on your own. And I thought, well, for sure I'm not going to graduate. But I got up there and he said, they need a principal of a 5-teacher school, grades 1 through 10, at Gazaway, Tennessee, on Monday morning.
Oh, my. That's in Cannon County, right?
Yeah. And that is, well, I knew where it was because I lived across the hill from over there. That's where I grew up. But I walked in over there on Monday morning. I'd never signed a contract. I'd never talked to the superintendent or anything. And I said, well, I can't do that. I'd teach. He said, nobody will have the principal job. And so he finally said, if you're hungry enough, you'll go. And so I said, well, I'm about as hungry as you can get. So I took off and went over there. Went and borrowed my brother's car to go into work. I got over there early that morning, and we built the fires and started and worked. And it was one of the more enjoyable jobs because I really was an opportunity to do a lot for a lot of kids that didn't have much opportunity.
That's like almost going home to you, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, it was just across the hill from where I was raised. And I'd been over in that part of the country all my life. And then I went from there down to Liberty the next year to teach and coach girls and boys basketball. And that was a new experience for me. But I used to go to Nashville, and I'd see Mr. Herbert Hayes. And Mr. Herbert went to school at Auburntown, where I did in his younger days, and he was assistant superintendent of the Nashville City Schools, and he tried to get me to come down, and he said, I'll have you in a principalship in 10 years or so. And I'd say, Mr. Herbert, I don't want to work in Nashville. I want to work in the country where the people need me. They need help. And he'd say, well, you know, I know what you're going to do. You're going to starve those deaths of those poor little girls because you can't make it. I tried it, and I had to leave and come to Nashville, but I've always enjoyed helping people and working with people, and I found out that if you help people to help themselves, then they'll do well and get along fine. But that was a great experience because the teachers, that particular year, they just recently got a retirement program. Mm-hmm. And so I remember Miss Nettie George, she had been teaching 40-something years, and she was going to retire at the end of that year, and they was going to pay her $10 a month when she'd never paid into a retirement program. Mm. To say that they got something, they gave her $10 a month. But anyway, that was a great experience, and there's only one way to go, and that was up with those kids. And they were really a great group of kids. I'd play with them and work with them, but I always was real strict and serious when it come time to go into the classroom and do the things that you ought to do. While we're here today, I want to talk a little bit about Monk Montgomery, because
we could talk about him all day.
I know I've heard a lot about him, but when I went to Las Casas, I was teaching here in Mitchell Nielsen. When I went to Las Casas, he was in about the seventh grade, I guess, and I went out there, and he hunted me up the very first day. I wasn't school hadn't started, and he that's the only time he ever called me Mr. Gaither. He come up and said, "Are you Mr. Gaither?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Are you the new coach at the high school?" I said, "Yes, sir." And he said, from then on, he always called me coach. Mm-hmm. But he was one of the greatest. He said, "I want to be a real good basketball player. Would you teach me?" And I said, "Yes, sir, if you'll train." I said, "Now, Jimmy, I've heard that you're a little lax about your behavior sometimes." And I said, "Now, I'm going to talk to your mother first." So I went down and had a meeting with her, and we talked, and I had to see his report card before she did. And if he didn't make good grades, he couldn't even buy his way into a game. But he's one of the best naturals. He would stay after school and shoot. He'd come up on my house on Saturday morning, and get the keys, and he'd stay all day long. And he loved the game of basketball.
Now, you know, Kittrell had to appreciate all that effort that you put into working with him to be such a good ball player, and then transfers from Las Casas to Kittrell.
Well. He was a natural, but I did teach him. I marked a lot of spots on the floor. Uh-huh. And I said, "Now, Jimmy, you just keep shooting here." And I'd tell him, I said, "Now, you remember that basketball is a game of rhythm."
Yeah.
Once you decide, if you stop to think about shooting, you're never going to hit that basket. So you just let her fly. Anytime you're facing that basket and you want to shoot, you just let it go. So I put spots all over the floor, and he'd beg me to stay. I'd sometimes say 30 or 40 minutes in the afternoon. My wife would say, "Jerry, that boy's going to wear you out." But he was a good kid, and that my wife ended up loving Jimmy. He came down and sat down by the fire one night when he was going to Kittrell, and he started crying. And my wife said, "Jimmy, what's wrong with you?" He said, "Ms. Gaither, I've got to go to Kittrell school next year, and I don't want to go. I want to stay here." And so we talked him, convinced him that everything would be all right. But he was a good kid, but he's easily led.
Everybody loved Jimmy, and he's just one of those people that you'd take to. But when you were talking about marking a place on the court, how many times did you mark a place on the other side of the court? Because I don't know how many times you'd see him come down the dribble down, and before he got to midcourt, he'd let one fly and nothing but the net.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
He was one of the most natural shooters I ever saw. But I heard when he was going to University of Auburn, they had an offense that he didn't face the basket near as much as he did in high school. And of course, I followed him all the way through high school. I used to work with John Hood and Dickie Palmer and them, broadcasting ball games I would always lose in the tournament first or second game, so I would always be able to help John and him go through the county tournament, the district tournament, the regional tournament, and all those things. I was looking last night, one of my good friends, Wayne Camel, his father used to coach at Woodbury, he and Bob Abernathy, back in the old days. And he was a big lover of the school of Auburntown, and he's always supported us, and he was a Presbyterian minister up in, or Methodist one, I've forgotten, up in Maryville, Tennessee. And he'd call me about twice a year, and he'd talk, and I'd say, "Now, Wayne, you realize that you're on your time." He said, "I know it, but I've got to talk to you once or twice a year." But I had a lot of interesting experiences.
Well, we're going to have to put our ears on, Jerry, because you've got a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Jerry Gaither.
Hello, Jerry. This is Mike Lawrence.
Who'd you say it was?
Mike Lawrence. I've been missing you, and I thought I'd give you a call and find out that you're doing quite well.
Oh yeah, I'm getting by all right. To be 85 years old, I'm doing pretty good.
Well, that's pretty good. You're just a baby compared to a lot of people.
Oh yeah. Well, I was always a baby. I was the last of 10 kids, and that's the words I always heard. Is that your baby brother?
No, I missed you at the restaurant a time or two, and I was in there, and I was just wondering if you were still doing well.
Well, I hadn't been. This has been, hadn't been a real good year for me. I've had a lot of physical problems, and just hadn't done too well. But I'm still going. But I miss you too, and it's always good to see you.
Well, you have a good day.
I always like for you to tell me what you see.
Yeah, I see a lot of things people don't believe. Hey, you have a good day,
okay,
buddy.
Thank you, Mike.
Bye.
Bye, bye.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, that's a good caller. Now, you know, there's been so many changes and everything, but you were talking about really you couldn't hardly feed your family on the income that you made back then, which was pretty much in education for many, many years. And it's always struck me as odd that you have people that will study hard. They spend the money to get through college, and then they go into a job that pays less than a lot of your normal jobs would pay, with people who didn't even have to strive to have an education. That's always been a remarkable thing, that when I look at the people who go through all of that so that they can do something for the kids and for the community. It's really something special.
Well, it's something that, it's not like being a called preacher in the ministry. Grew up in the Southern Baptist Church, and we used to always have people saying it's their calling. But you had to have a devotion to it and care about it and care about the kids. Because when I first started teaching, well, we got paid 9 months out of the year. And so the rest of the months we had to do something else. But you have to have a real devotion and really care. But it's so thrilling and so enjoyable when you know you've really helped some kid, especially kids that didn't do too well. I remember one afternoon last week, Judy Gordon, who was Dr. Gordon's mm-hmm. Daughter, mm-hmm. she came in, and I was in the dining room eating. I'm at Adams Place in Independent Living, and I was eating back there with a bunch of men. She came back there, and she told me who she was. She said, "Mr. Gaither, I just had to come to see you. I was in town, and I had to come see." She said, "I remember when you had that demonstration at school, and you had to put a piece of liver or something in a Coca-Cola, and how that acid in there would eat it up." And she said, "But you know, I never did quit drinking Coca-Colas." And she said, "I still love them." But she, her father, you know, wrote a book about basketball
and baseball. But,
baseball. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was a pitcher, I think, played at the university and pitched independent ball and so on. But it was so good to see her, because she was here. I believe her brother is back in town working here now as a photographer.
He is, Al.
In
fact, they're one of our sponsors.
You have so many people that you see that. You know, when I think of the kids that I had in school in years gone by, and she came back and gave me a big hug the other day, and I hadn't seen her since she was in the eighth grade. But it's always a pleasure. You have to have a real devotion and real caring about people to do the good things. And that's one of the things that we have now. The emphasis right now is on achievement, on intelligence, how smart you are and how you can do. But back in the old days, we had people. I remember Dr. Harley Fite, who was president of Carson Newman College for a number of years. Mm-hmm. He was considered, they were called encouragers. They encouraged people. They would. It was tough in the hill country where I was raised, but they would encourage you to go ahead and do things. You just got to do the best you can do today, and not tomorrow will take care of itself.
Well, we've got another caller on the line, Jerry, so we got to put her ears back on. All right. Caller, welcome aboard with Jerry Gaither.
Yeah, Truman, this is Joe Frank Jernigan.
Hey, Joe.
Mr. Gaither, one of the first jobs I ever had, he was a personnel man down there at General Electric, and he hired me. There was a room full that day, and I was fortunate, and got to talk to him and got hired and worked down there 2.5 years. And, he's always a good man, and y'all were talking about Montgomery. I was playing ball out there at Kitchell at that time, and I'd stay a lot of days after practice. Monk wanted me to. He'd shoot 100 shots at 4 or 5 different places on the floor, and 100 foul shots every day after everybody left. If he missed one, he'd start over again. That's how dedicated he was.
Joe Frank, it sure is good to hear from you. Is your wife still working?
No, Mr. Gaither, she's started getting that Alzheimer's about 3 years ago, and she had to quit. But she's hanging in there. But I was listening to y'all, and I just want to call you and talk to you, man. So I appreciate it.
She was one of our good employers when I was superintendent of the county school system. I always had a lot of respect for her.
She's a sweet lady. You know, you've touched so many lives. We could probably sit here for weeks on end and take calls in for people that you have influenced and you've been friends with all this time.
Well, I still do a lot of handshaking. And people say to me, one thing, say, why do you do that? I said, well, my father called me in when I was leaving that old holler back in there. I was the last of the 10 kids. And he said, now, son, you don't have any money, and so you got to make friends and make friends and make friends. So I've been shaking hands ever since. But it's I cherish the friendships that I've had, like the kids that I had in school, like Judy Gordon coming in and seeing you. And I saw a kid not long ago out at Las Casas, and I hadn't seen him since I left there in the 57. And he said something. He spoke to me. He said, you don't know who I am. I said, you're a Mathis, but that's just all I can go. I don't know which one. And he told me his name, and he said, yeah, I was in school there, but I hadn't seen him in all those years in between.
Now, you were talking a minute ago about the test and things like that, and how we're almost putting kids on an assembly line and trying to all come out the same. That's not the way education has been in the past, has it?
Well, no, and I'd have a hard time understanding this and appreciating it. We've developed a concept in this country that winning is the only thing, and winning is not the only thing. You play to win and you play your best. I would hate to try to run a school without an athletic program.
Right.
But when you get it outside, like the colleges and universities now, they pay $5, $6, $7 million to a coach for a year, and then the rest of the players teams accordingly. And in the public schools, we've followed the same suit, and the pressure is on from the television industry and the communications industry to win at all costs, and it's not something that we older people can accept and appreciate.
We're living in a pressurized society anyway, but on the other hand, there doesn't seem to be a commitment from a lot of people as far as responsibility and those type things.
Well, see, when I left GE, they called me. And the commissioner wanted to talk to me, and I told him, I said, well, you know, I'm not looking for a job. I'm not interested in a job. I've just gotten my feet on the ground. I've been here about 2.5 years, and I think I could do my job without any kind of supervision anymore. But they said, well, we want to talk to you. But when I went down there and started talking to them, they started talking to me about how jobs were going to change and the need to change. And that's when we started building, putting counselors in schools. Sputnik was the thing that went up in 1957 that caused us to get in this rat race of trying to. Right now, we overemphasize I think we don't overemphasize it, but we don't emphasize enough the other aspects of life. In fact, for instance, I brought a book here with me that the state legislature enacted in 1961 and produced all these documents in 1965, that we were, everybody that went through public schools and public universities would have a courses and knowledge about our democratic form of life and compared to communism and fascism. Well, as soon as Russia cooled off a little bit, we put all that aside, and now we don't teach enough about who we are and why we are and where we come from. So we need to teach more of those other things, I think, that besides science and mathematics. And don't get me wrong, science and mathematics give us a lot of wonderfully good things. They've given us so many good things, but we also we have to realize that the benefits from sometimes outweigh their good, but sometimes we just don't get to do the things that we know that are good for human beings, and so we neglect the needs of the people, as what I call the human needs that people have. And when I worked for General Electric, I've never worked anywhere where they cared about people more than they did when I worked down there. But then that changed in latter years, and so they all went to working to see how much money they could produce and how much we could get in retirement and the benefits and so on. But the public school system is now, it's kind of a dog eat dog situation. It's too much. It's the word competition brought us a lot of good, wonderful things, but we must learn cooperation if we're going to get along in the world. You look at our Congress right now, they won't work together to do anything. They at loggerheads with each other, and so therefore we're suffering from it because we don't get a lot of the things that we ought to have, because people are struggling with the benefits that they think that they're entitled to.
Yes, there's a lot of cross purposes there and a lot of friction, and you know, we don't seem to be able to work together as a group. Now, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Jerry Gaither.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic is more than just a clinic. It's the doctors you can trust, a technician you can believe in, and a staff member who goes the extra mile. From the time someone walks in our doors, the difference becomes evident. All of our resources are used to improve the healthcare experience of our patients, and we have been a part of Rutherford and surrounding counties for over 60 years. Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
Murfreesboro Medical Clinic.
What sets Murfreesboro Automotive apart from other auto repair shops?
I think a customer wants to visit with the technician that's actually doing the work. I have no problem with that.
Chuck Haynes at Murfreesboro Automotive.
There's no reason not to. If they want to find out what's wrong with the car or what may have caused it, then we have an open door with the technician. They can visit with him all they want.
From minor to major repair and everything in between, Murfreesboro Automotive, just off Broad between Chewy's and Chili's on Ridgely Road. 962-7327.
Hi, this is Mike, owner of Maple Street Grill, inviting you to check out our new website, online ordering, and download our iPhone and Android app at maplestreetgrill.com, and just click on the icon to download it free to your phone. Maple Street Grill at 109 North Maple Street in downtown historic Murfreesboro.
This is Good Neighbor Events, brought to you by the Omni Hut Restaurant in Smyrna, AmeriCare Pest Control, and the Rutherford Home Show, Saturday mornings at 11:30 on WGNS.
Aloha, this is Omni Hut.
Polly Walls at the Omni Hut Restaurant. Polly, what's the most popular dinner?
The Tahitian Feast. If you're not that hungry, a lot of times they'll just do the poo-poo platter of appetizers. Bora Bora, shrimp Panamanian, egg rolls, wontons, Tahitian tidbits, Polynesian pit ribs, crab rangoon, chicken on a stick.
Rediscover the Omni Hut.
Come see us at 618 South Lowry Street, just inside Smyrna, near Nissan.
It's Monday, July the 9th, and the Red Cross is still critically low on blood, so please give the gift of life today. The Red Cross is having a blood drive all through the day today, from 10 until 6 tonight. Now, the Red Cross here in Murfreesboro is at 501 Memorial Boulevard. Now, all this month, the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department are signing up youngsters to be a part of their football and cheerleading programs. Youth football is for ages 5 through 13, and for the 5 and 6-year-olds, it's flag football. The fee is $70 per player, and cheerleading is for 7 to 13-year-olds. The fee is $30, and the cheerleading uniform costs about $85. For information, call the Murfreesboro Parks and Recreation Department, 907-2251. And Movies Under the Stars continues. Tonight it's over at the Cason Lane Trailhead. Tomorrow night it's over at Cannonsburg. And the free feature starts at 8:30. This week's film is Nancy Drew. The Farmer's Market's in the morning from 7 until noon over at the Lane Agri Park. Get those Good Neighbor events to us at least 2 weeks before they occur. Those are Good Neighbor events.
It's the Truman Show. A look at the people and news shaping Rutherford County with Truman Jones.
And welcome back with Jerry Gaper. And we want to let you know that Jerry, one of his old buddies, Al Gordon, is one of our sponsors. And, of course, that's Dr. Gordon's son.
That's right.
And it's Gordon Ralston Photography. That's 315 Hickerson Drive here in Murfreesboro, 615-396-8776 is the phone number. Or you can reach them at www.gordonralstonphoto.com if your internet is still up. And Al Gordon, a master craftsman photographer, and Larry Ralston, certified craftsman, are both hometown guys and are the most awarded studio in the Middle Tennessee area operating a full-service photographic studio in Murfreesboro. They specialize in weddings, high school seniors, and family portraits. Their work is classic yet current with a creative edge. Al was even awarded the Grand Award for the best wedding image in the world. Gordon Ralston, they look forward to meeting you and will treat you like family. And we have a caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Jerry Gaither.
Mr. Gaither, hello!
Goodwin.
All right, we got to get our ears on. Okay, now we're ready.
Freddie, are you there?
Yeah, Mr. Gaither.
Hey, Freddie, I'll never forget.
Yes, sir.
I'll never forget you. You come in every morning. You all pepped up and hepped up, and you come in every morning with some bright idea, and I'd say, okay, Freddie, tell me what it is. You had some bright idea, and I'd say, well, we're going to do that, but that comes later. But I always liked your enthusiasm. The kids that I had the most trouble with was trying to get some jacked up a little bit when they needed motivating, but you never needed that. You were always anxious and ready to go. You and the little boy that I had at different years that was a State Farm agent now, I can't think of his name, but they always come in with some big idea to go, but I always enjoyed having you and as well as being your neighbor at one time.
You know, I was in an eighth grade class with Judy Gordon, and I see Judy periodically. Matter of fact, we talked about you last week when she was in town.
Well, yeah, Judy came to see me the other day. And I was so glad to see her. You know, I hadn't seen her since y'all were in the eighth grade. I can't remember what year that was.
1960.
Well, it was a long time ago. But anyway.
Truman, I'm going to tell you, this man, I learned more from this man than probably all the rest of the teachers I had in grade school and high school. But, you know, we went to Crenshaw. He taught the eighth grade there. And Crenshaw had a really great teachers over there. I mean, they were really seasoned, and they were really good. And one thing about Mr. Gaither is that he's an educator first, sports second.
Well, I appreciate all those good things you say, Freddie, but Judy came in last week and to see me. It's the first thing she did. She gave me a big hug. She said, Mr. Gaither, it's so good to see you again, but I don't think I'd have known her if she hadn't told me who she was, because I hadn't seen her since I left there.
But well, as I let you go, I just want to call and say hi. I'm listening to you, and I love all the great stories that you have.
Thank you a lot, Freddie.
Okay, see you, sir.
Thanks, Freddie. Well, now, you were wanting to talk about the one man, one vote rule.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the Supreme Court has a lot of rulings. In fact, some of the big ones they had was Brown versus Board of Education back in 54 that dealt with integration. But then back in the 60s, they had what they called the Texas case, and the Rutherford County had a couple of lawsuits in federal court. And when they ruled the one man, one vote, for instance, one reason that changed, I forgot the guy's name now, he didn't get reelected, but he represented a district here in Murfreesboro and had 4,000 or 5,000 people in it, and the one out in Porterfield had 200 or 300. So they thought that was unfair, but when they went to federal court and these county commission group, or they were called squires back then, or justice of peace in county courts, they were the old county court.
Right.
You know, all this comes over from England. We followed the English rule when we set up those things. And at one time, if you're chairman of the county court, you had both legislative, judicial, and executive powers.
Right.
You could raise a man's taxes, vote to have him arrested, and do all those kind of things in one day. But when they ruled on that, our cases here, the school board, Ms. Dr. Strickland's wife, I can't remember her name right now, and Esker Garrison and them had a case on this. And then the county commission had a, old county court had a lawsuit. And once they put that on stay when they took the Texas court, and then when, of course, when they ruled, that made it moot. There was it was no longer legal. So when they ruled that they had to be reapportioned ever so many years, that they passed that legislation, or passed the, it wasn't legislation, they had that ruling, and then they wanted to delay that for a few months or a couple of years till the term expired, but they said no. The federal judge in Nashville said no. The Supreme Court has ruled that you'll do it as expeditiously as possible. So that meant the next general election. Mm-hmm. So they had an election at that time. I think we had a little over 50 magistrates, had 25 districts, and then we had each city got a member for being a city, and that was Smyrna and Murfreesboro. So we had 52 or something, 53. I'm not sure just how many it was, but
is it 52 or 54? I think
54.
Yeah.
It's I used to have all that down and had all that in my mind. In fact,
I remember when they went down to the 42 and then the 21.
Yeah, it changed. I remember that Bobby Thompson and I were running from the same district after they had, they had two from each district.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes he'd vote one way and I'd vote the other. But so the people really didn't have anybody that they went to. They didn't know what to do because one would vote one way and one would vote the other. But most of the time, Bobby and I saw eye to eye on things. But that's when they went, we had to reapportion and had the reelection. And we had a lot of, when we met the first time, we met in July and had to establish a budget for the year.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd just been elected. And about 40% of the old ones were back and 60% of the new ones. And we met for three long days.
Wow.
Until way in the afternoon, night, and we'd get in a debate every afternoon whether they ought to go home and milk the cows and do all those things that farmers did back in those days or what. And so we would finally end up going ahead and staying longer and trying to get things done. So, but when they had that meeting, the people would speak out of the audience, and we didn't have much rules. We didn't have an organization structure. So the last day I made a motion to create a committee to study the and establish some rules of procedure and so on, and for the county government. And they're still using those today. They've amended them a lot on several times, and they need to be amended when it fits the need. And they're not sacred because I had a part in developing them. But we did that. I remember the when we had that, we asked. It was one of the few things that I ever remember that the full county commission or county court voted on unanimously. But I'd given everybody, I think the main reason that worked was because everybody had an opportunity to offer suggestions. We had meetings in the daytime, we had meetings at night, we'd let you write in proposals that you had, so nobody could say, well, I'm not a part of this. So when we met that time, I never will forget, we had the Pledge of Allegiance in there for the first time, and in which I was for. But when we had that, I got to thinking we were working on proposals, and I thought, well, now we've got to give these people that they'd come to the meeting a chance. So Squire Odom recommended that and put it in there. And so one of the first questions is one of the old members had been there about 45 years, said, Squire Gaither said, I thought that was for little school kids to say the Pledge of Allegiance, the flag. I said, well, that's not my recommendation, but as I remember it, Squire Odom was the one that recommended that. And he got up and made a talk for about 3 minutes, and then he sat back down, and it got quiet, and somebody said, call for the question. Somebody said, and so then they called for the vote, and they had it, but he got up and said, my son was in World War II, and my grandson's over in Vietnam now, and I don't know that he ought to be there. And so when he got through, that sealed that up, and so we ended up making that. But later on, I was chairman of that committee, and we developed a set of rules of procedure that is basically they're still using now. They've changed them some, and they need to change them. But
I think the Roberts Rules of Order now, I believe that's right.
Oh, yeah. But before that, the only thing they had was a little bitty agenda that was on one page, but it didn't have any way. But people, I remember the odd one we had was the Foxtail Committee. And people would bring in the foxtail, and you get paid for it. A gray fox was so much, and a red fox was so much. But anyway, we developed that, and they're still using it, and it's worked for us for a long time. And if they keep changing it as it meets the needs, they'll do that. That's why that we have the school board and the road boards, and all those things are reapportioned as well as the county court. But one reason I was involved in that was I was traveling statewide with all the public school systems in the state. And when I was trying to figure out how to get some changes brought, and so I decided, well, since I'm traveling, I'm going to get the Tennessee School Board Association and the Tennessee Magistrates Association. Mm-hmm. So I was founding presidents of the Tennessee. We were called magistrates back then. I was founding president of the Tennessee Magistrates Association in 1969, I guess it was. And we had a meeting at Middle Tennessee State University, and I think back then the meals was about $2 or $2.50 apiece. I know I lost a couple of $100, and of course they said, well, we'll pay you after we get organized and meet, but I became the first president of that organization. And before then, none of the counties across the state had the systems of gathering information to make decisions about. So I spent a lot of time. I helped 7 or 8, or maybe 10 different counties across the state, like Sullivan County and Putnam County and White County and Dyer County and some of those developed the procedures for operating and learning how to do things a little bit better. But before, I remember before, sometimes when we started as a committee, we found that we had 36 different committees of one kind that's been formed over the years. And, well, nobody knew what they were, and it didn't say how many people was on it and how when you met. We didn't keep any records. We didn't really do anything. It was when we...
Ooh, for the good old days.
Those were the good old days, yeah. But we had to change, and things always change, and and you have to be ready for change. But it's just a thing that had to happen.
You know, in those times, we're talking about quarterly court.
Yeah.
And now it's every month. And they've gone down to 21 members, and back then they had over 50 and then down to 40. You know, it's an interesting way of looking at how government has evolved around here. And it seems like it's more hands-on now for the county commissioners and others. They seem to be more directly involved in government than they used to be.
Well, I think without question they are, that they're more informed about what they're doing. I remember when I first went on the quarterly court, they call it the quarterly court, or the county court, and we met four times a year, and our pay was $40 a year. And I
well earned.
And I lived a mile from the courthouse, so I was to get a check for 80 cents, and they told me at the office they was going to write you a check for 80 cents. I said, "Now, don't do that." They said, "Well, we're supposed to do that." And I said, "Well, let me tell you one thing. If you write the check, I'm going to take it home, and I'm going to frame it and hang it on a wall, and I'll never cash it." But that was the travel, because I lived a mile from the courthouse. I lived down in the in Richland Place off of the main street going out of town. So it's just a lots of changes have taken place since then.
You know, they've always said over the years, as I remember, that they said the smaller the group, the less conflict. Like you went from 50 all the way down to now 21. Do you find that that's actually accurate?
Well, I think the most important thing is the method you use in trying to gather information so you can make decisions. Your decisions ought to be made on the information that can stand the light of day. This is one thing that I was always for. I believe that all the public's business ought to stand the light of day. When John Bragg was in the state legislature, he was one of the pioneers in the Sunshine Law. And I always agreed with that. And I had several conversations, and I always agreed with that. And I talked to him about how we were trying to do that with the way we operated. So, like, we started keeping records of the committee meetings and how they voted. But before, when they had no record of that, you just, and sometimes we'd meet without a quorum. And the real thing is the essence of trying to know what decisions you want to make and know why you make them, and let the public know. And sometimes, right now, sometimes I think we've made a little move in a retreat from that by not always having things out in the sunshine.
You know, one thing that you kind of look back with all the commissioners that were involved, and of course you see a lot of that in the federal government with each senatorial group, is the old pork barrel. If you'll do this for me in my district, I'll do this for you in your district. Did you see much of that while you were there?
Well, when we first started, until we got some new procedures and rules, there was an awful lot of this, but a lot of this procedures we had of gathering information, and people could look at how you voted and what you said, and then the newspapers would put it in the radio, would put it in the media reports, and so a lot of people were reluctant to do the things that they've done in the past. But that was a great help to us from that standpoint. But yeah, that in the old days, and there will always be some of that. There's no way to get away from the human element, in life that that deals with those kind of things. But we've come a long way, and you've seen the procedures now that we used to didn't have to hold hearings,
right,
and all that stuff, but it's all right for the people who were in the know-how and in the pay and had the money and so on, but it didn't take care of those people who were working at a job on a night shift or something. Mm-hmm. They had no way of expressing their views to people. So it's been good and bad, but our federal government is gone into what I call gridlock, and that's one of the worst things that's ever happened to this country, I think, is the gridlock that our nation has gotten into.
You know, you've been on both sides of the fence with the county commission and with the school board, and you know there are other areas. I've been in down in Texas and some of the other places where the school board, when they're elected, they have total control of their budget. Do you think that we will ever see a time like that here? Because you're talking about upwards of 70% probably of the total budget that's in their particular government in most places.
Yeah, the budgets in Tennessee, the majority of them, the largest portion of them go for education.
Right.
And I don't see that anytime soon happening in Tennessee. You know, it's talked from time to time, but the only trouble is that once you get that, then the other side begins to work to eliminate you and the education side of it. So the public's business ought to be the public's business, and you stand and keep it wherever it is. Back in the old days, well, I keep talking about old days.
But it doesn't seem that old to me, that far
away. Remember when the sheriff's department was so small and little and so on, and
just
we used to have an attitude that, well, people are guilty, so they don't need anything. But later on, we found out that the people who in law enforcement now are a lot more informed. They do a lot better job of taking care of the things that they need to be doing. In the old days, if a man had good judgment, he used it, but if he didn't have good judgment, he used it, but then it was not beneficial to the general public. But in our Constitution, it talked about we the people of the United States in order to form a more perfect union. Well, that is an awful essential thing to us, is having unity, being unified. And you don't have to agree with everybody, but eventually you take a vote, and whatever you do, you live with. When I was superintendent of schools, I didn't always agree with the school board, but whatever they voted to do, when they had a majority vote and voted to do it, I always tried to carry it out to the best of my ability. I didn't always agree with it, but I would always try to carry it out to the best of my ability. But I really think that in a lot of ways we've come a long way, and yet sometimes we still have a way to go. I'm not sure whether we'll always be a... People always say, well, why don't we just elect people and send them to Nashville and send them to Washington, D.C. and get everything all straightened out? Well, you don't ever get things always straightened out. You have to keep reelecting and keep working because you don't enforce the law like you used to. You have to do it differently because you have different populations, different needs, and different people.
I think you just hit on it. Different people. Everyone's different. And when they look at government, they're looking to see what they're going to get out of it rather than looking at the totality of what government is actually doing for everybody. And sometimes I think that we've gotten into a rut of considering ourselves first above. I mean, we all love our country, but do we love our country enough to make sacrifices? And that's always been one of the biggest issues. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Jerry Gaither.
Slick Pig Barbecue. down on East Main, there's pork, beef, chicken, and wings. Sauce too good to be true.
Now at Slick Pick Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock. $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw.
Slick Pick Barbecue, 1920 East Main.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. Please come by and see us one day. We're conveniently located at 2230 Mercury Boulevard in Murfreesboro, and we have hot, delicious Otis Spunkmeyer cookies every day. Come and see us, First National Bank of Murfreesboro, 2230 Mercury Boulevard. Our number is 494-4200. Member FDIC. And home of Otis Spunkmeyer hot, delicious cookies. First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
He knows Rutherford County as good as anybody. Truman Jones. It's the Truman Show here on WGNS AM and FM.
And welcome back with Jerry Gaither. Jerry, this has been, I mean, it just flew by. I don't know what happened to time. And we didn't even get started.
Well, I've always talked a lot, except now I have a severe hearing loss, but up here I can hear you, but I don't talk as much as I used to because I don't hear what other people are saying.
Well, that's a shame because I don't know of anybody that has the knowledge that you do that can share with all the things that have happened in our community. And, you know, I just really do enjoy being with you. I mean, you're a lot of fun, and it's an education for me also.
Well, I really appreciate all the fine things you say about me, Truman, but I've enjoyed life and people have always been good to me. I don't know why.
Because you're good to everybody else.
The elderly people have always, when I was growing up in a little community of Auburn Town, the people always liked me, and I always got along with the elderly people. But I've always tried to treat people. I remember my father telling me when the Army was in your own maneuvers and they was using some foul language, he said, "Now, son, don't you let me hear come in talking like those soldier boys." I knew exactly what he meant. But anyway, life has been good to me, and I've had a lot of ups and downs, but I've had a lot more ups than I have downs. And regardless, I always remember my friend Bob Blankenship said to me one time, he said, "Gaither, how do you stay so positive all the time?" I said, "Bob, you have to. I'm a leader, and I need to stay positive." I said, "My heart is breaking right now." I said, he didn't know it, but at the time I just had to, I'd had things with my grandchildren and people trying to do things to them.
Right.
It was awful. And I said, "My heart's breaking, but I can't show that because my job is to lead."
And you have led. And it's been such a pleasure to have you on today. And I will be looking to get you back on again.
I appreciate it, but not next week.
All right. Not next week. Okay. Tomorrow.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. Tomorrow we have Judy Whitehill. I think you know Judy.
Yes, I do.
And we're going to have her on tomorrow at 2 o'clock.
Tell her I said hi.
I'll do it. We'll see.
If she needs me, call me.
Okay.